There are lots of stories in the Bible that feature water as a major component. Take today's gospel reading, for example. Jesus is in a boat on the lake with some of the disciples. A storm comes up and nearly swamps them. And the disciples are very frightened. But Jesus tells the storm to stop, and everything calms down. Their lives had been threatened, but everyone survives. The story asks, who then is this that commands even the winds and the water? Well, the well-versed reader of the Bible will immediately think back to Moses, who commanded the winds to cut a dry path through the waters of the sea. And there are many other biblical stories that talk about survival at sea. The story of Noah, who kept the faith and survived the ravages of the greatest flood in the memory of the ancient human race. Why all these stories about water, about lives that are threatened by danger at sea? Well, these stories resonate with something at the core of our being. Some of us have personal experience of disaster on the water. All of us can imagine what it's like to be threatened by deep waters. And it's not hard to imagine how very frightening it is when our life is in danger and it seems that we're about to perish, even if Jesus or Moses is right there with us, even if the best doctor in the world is looking after us, even if we are protected by every kind of safety harness and insurance, even if Superman were just around the corner. And all of us have to go through deep waters at various times in our lives. Some of us have already been there several times. We've been near death by illness or accident, surviving only by some quirk of fate, or should I say, by the grace of God. And eventually, of course, all of us are going to pass through the deep waters of death itself, ending up God only knows where. There are times when we are fatalistic about all of this. What else could our survival possibly depend upon other than the arbitrary forces of nature, those quirks of fate? We live, we die like every other form of life, and we just have to take what comes and accept our fate. And still, there is something within us that rebels against mere fatalism. We can't believe that we're simply at the mercy of an arbitrary fate. We feel compelled to believe that there is also something else at work. Although, when the forces of nature get the better of us, that compulsion to believe in something else soon lets us down. That's what Jesus is addressing when he says to his friends in the sinking ship, "Where is your faith?" The most interesting and profound stories of human survival are those in which the forces of nature have been overcome, not because fate has been cheated or people somehow got lucky, but because the survival of human beings has a moral priority over the forces of nature which otherwise would have done them in. And the Bible is full of stories about this. Early in Genesis, we are presented with the story of Noah and the ark. A great flood is wreaking havoc and wiping out not only human life, but animal life as well. But a moral priority for the survival of humans, along with the animals who represent all of creation, brings Noah to build the ark so that life does not get wiped out. This moral priority for the survival of life is equated in the language of the Bible with the will and the grace of God. We use God talk to describe our survival when it is morally imperative. We've put the name of God on that moral life force that works for the survival of the good in the face of destruction, It's therefore also God's will that the ancient Israelite slaves should be liberated from the cruel oppression perpetrated by the empire, and that somehow, by the grace of God, they should survive. Their slavery was immoral, and there was a moral imperative for their freedom, even though there was no obvious economic, political, or other natural reason why they should not simply suffer and perish in their oppression. And significantly, their journey to freedom includes a journey through deep waters. Why do you think it's always the water that appears in these stories? Perhaps we humans have some sort of deeply rooted fear of drowning. In any case, the threat of annihilation is often pictured in our stories by the threat of deep water. Along with stories of Noah and family, Jesus and friends, we have the stories of characters like the prophet Jonah, even Paul the Apostle. We have a story about Paul who survives disaster at sea. And of course, as I've already suggested, the central story of the Judeo-Christian tradition is that story of the Israelite slaves who, in their struggle for survival, also passed through the deep waters of the sea. Now, these stories are significant for us today because they also relate to our ritual of baptism. Not only is this implied in the stories themselves, it's made explicit by a comment about the Exodus in the first letter to the Corinthians that we read this morning as well. Don't worry, I'm louder than they are. People can still hear me, right? This is delightful accompaniment. And so we read in the letter to the Corinthians that they all passed through the sea and all were baptized via Moses in the sea. So this baptism of the people of Israel in the sea is a story which proclaims the moral imperative for the survival of human beings, especially in the face of cruelty, injustice, and oppression. And when we put this into the language of Christianity, the theological language of Christianity, we say that baptism proclaims God's will for our salvation by God's grace. Well, we have baptized three precious little human beings today. Andreas, Matthew, and Foster. And they now have a story to tell about their baptism. And if you will, that story also proclaims God's will for their salvation by God's grace. Now, we do not know what lies in store for these precious little ones of ours. No doubt they will face times in their lives when they meet the challenges of deep water. We don't know when those challenges will come, where they'll take them, or in what manner they might be survived. We don't know such things about any of our futures, and well, in this business, there are no guarantees of the sort you get when you buy a new car or an insurance policy. Nevertheless, we people of faith proclaim today that there is a moral imperative for their survival, and we affirm our faith in God's purposes for them and our trust in God's grace. And therefore, Andreas, Matthew, and Foster will be able to say, along with the rest of us who have been baptized, come hell or high water, I know one thing, I have been baptized, I have passed through the deep waters, and I meant to be a survivor. Not just a survivor, but a thriver. Because we human beings, created in the image of God, we are meant to thrive, to be free, to be happy, to live in a promised land of peace and prosperity. That is God's will for us, and by God, by the grace of God, that is our destiny. At the same time, baptism takes us through the deep waters into a community which takes the will of God seriously. We understand that all of creation is a divine self-expression and that all human beings are created in the image of God. All are meant to have their fair share of freedom, justice, and peace. Therefore, we identify with those who are in deep water now. And we're committed to cooperation with the moral imperative to set them free. And when we look into the world around us, events of biblical proportion are screaming for our attention. Hundreds of thousands have been killed by floods in Pakistan and China in the last few weeks alone. Tens of millions have been left homeless. And talk about boats on deep water. Boats carrying aid to Gaza. Boats carrying refugees to Canada. Our governments are telling us that these boats are full of criminals and powered by terror and organized crime. Is anyone willing to consider that these boats might be today's arks or vessels with Jesus on board in the Sea of Galilee? Do we hear Jesus speaking to us from those boats asking, "Where is your faith?" Or isn't that what Jesus was asking about in that boat on Lake Galilee? Ah, you thought it was about believing in his superhuman power. And if you said, "I believe," his magic would protect you forever. I have to keep thinking that the faith in question here is not a faith in the superhuman power of Jesus or of Moses or whomever, but a faith in the moral imperative for human survival in spite of the threat of deep water, in spite of the bullying of empires, in spite of self-serving bureaucracies, in spite of our own self-righteous and manipulative government authorities. Like Moses, Jesus stood up to the power of the empire and offered freedom to the people. And one of the biblical ways of telling this story is through the metaphor of salvation from the threat of deep water. Well, the water in this little baptismal font of ours is not actually very deep, is it? And it hardly compares with Noah's flood or the Sea of Reeds or the stormy water of Lake Galilee. And evidently it wasn't all that frightening for our babies to face those waters of baptism today. Not sure, but one or two of them even seem to be enjoying it. But be that as it may appear, the power of the symbol of that baptismal water is not diminished. For in facing that water, we affirm the grace of God which gives our lives dignity and meaning, and the destiny which declares our lives as precious in the eternal love of God. And finally, we need also to remember that we ourselves have been baptized, that the Spirit of God demands our self-respect and spiritual well-being, even if we are in the deepest of water, in the midst of hardship, at the brink of death. And there is nothing more profound that we can say to each other in every condition of life than to remind each other of our baptism. And so I say to you today, to Andreas, to Matthew, to Foster, to all the rest of you, remember your baptism and be thankful. Thanks be to God. Amen.